The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hi, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. Well, I've got a long lineup. Starting with Facebook, We the Kids group, the very first U.S. guide dog. Continuing with fightingblindness.org, traveling with a guide dog. Followed by medicalnewstoday.com, Alzheimer's and glucose metabolism. And tomsguide.com notifies 30 million Android users have gotten adware apps. The bleeping computer article. 9to5Mac.com has a notice about the Atomic Mac OS Stealer malware. And RamseySolutions.com has the top 12 cheapest travel destinations. I will start with the ones on and east of the Mississippi, and if I have time, we can do the rest, but it is quite a long list. From We the Kids group on Facebook, on this day in 1928, Buddy, a German Shepherd, becomes the first guide dog for a U.S. citizen, Morris Frank. Morris Frank was a blind man from Nashville. His father read him an article by Dorothy Eustace, a woman living in Switzerland who had seen shepherds training dogs to lead blind people to get around. Excited by the idea, Frank wrote a letter to Eustace and received a response letter 30 days later, inviting him to come see for himself. Frank then took a ship to Europe and trained extensively with a dog that had been bred specifically to lead a blind person. The training was hard, but after weeks with the dog, Frank could get around the nearby Swiss village holding tightly to a harness to which Buddy was strapped. Morris Frank returned to America. From the day he got off the ship, he was successful. At one point, in front of a group of dumbfounded reporters, Buddy led Frank safely across a busy New York street. I shall never forget the next 3 minutes. 10-ton trucks rocketing past, cabs blowing their horns in our ears, drivers shouting at us. When we finally got to the other side and I realized what a really magnificent job he had done, Frank later wrote, "When Frank returned to Nashville, people were amazed at the sight of the blind man and his dog successfully navigating busy sidewalks and couldn't believe that it was the same blind boy they had so recently taken pity on. What amazed people the most was that Buddy had an ability best known as intelligent disobedience, which meant that he would obey Morris except when executing the command would result in harm to his master. If there was a low-hanging branch ahead on the sidewalk, for instance, Buddy knew how to navigate around it to the point where Morris wouldn't hurt his head on it." About this time, Frank, Eustace, and several others co-founded the Seeing Eye, an institution set up to train guide dogs and their blind masters. Today, the organization reports that it has, in its 80-year history, trained 14,000 dogs. Buddy is considered the first. In 1978, on the 50th anniversary of the founding of the school, the U.S. issued a commemorative stamp in honor of the Seeing Eye. Source, Wikipedia. From fightingblindness.org, traveling with a guide dog, advice from a seasoned traveler. International Guide Dog Day was April 26th, an opportunity to celebrate the work of guide dogs around the world and raise awareness about the importance of guide dog services to help people who are blind or have low vision live independently. This day is extra special to Johnny, J-A-N-N-I, Lehrer Stein, L-E-H-R-E-R-S-T-E-I-N, as she's celebrating the 5th anniversary of graduating from the Guide Dogs for the Blind with the world's best guide dog, Shiloh, S-H-I-L-O-H. In their 5 years together, Jenny and Shiloh have traveled domestically often and to 5 countries outside of the United States. Jenny was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, RPE, at the age of 26 in 1982. while living in Washington, D.C., pursuing her career in law. Soon after her diagnosis, Jenny and her husband, Lenny, decided to relocate to San Francisco, California, as it's a much more walkable and accessible city. They've continued to reside in San Francisco ever since, raising their three children. Since her diagnosis with RP, Jenny has been involved with the Foundation Fighting Blindness through the local Bay Area chapter and participated in the first Walk for Sight event, now known as the Vision Walk. Nationally, Jenny has served as a trustee since 2010 and is now a member of the board of directors, serving as chair of the Accessibility Task Force. Now that Jenny is a retired attorney, she currently spends most of her time focused on disability rights advocacy and was recently appointed by President Biden to the Committee for the Preservation of the White House. With her ever-busy lifestyle, it was challenging to find the right time to get a guide dog. Guide dogs are a very serious responsibility, says Jenny. They become a member of your family, but you're also responsible for keeping them safe and well. There are many demands that come with a guide dog, but the rewards make it so worthwhile. You're forever a team. Jenny was matched with her guide dog, Shiloh, through the organization San Rafael Guide Dogs for the Blind. After an intense application process, Jenny stayed on their San Rafael campus for 2 weeks of training, which included acclimating to the grounds and trainers for 2 days, and then on the third day meeting her guide dog. I've met and worked with the President of the United States, and yet I was as nervous and excited as I'd ever been to meet my guide dog, says Jenny. I had requested a dark-colored dog because I still have some light-dark differentiation, so it's easier for me to see my dog against the light pavement. And what I got was this perfectly trained, calm black lab. I'm so grateful to Shiloh's foster family who helped raise him. It took a lot of hard work and time to build trust with each other, but now Jenny relies on Shiloh daily and credits him for her independence, especially when it comes to her travels. Jenny and Shiloh cross busy streets, take public transportation such as the bus or subway often, and even fly across the country and internationally by themselves. Jenny and Shiloh navigate through the airport crowds and barriers, find the correct gate, and board the airplane. At 60 pounds, Shiloh has learned to squeeze himself under the seat in front of Jenny for the flight and knows it's his only job to stay seated until he receives further instructions. Shiloh's extremely alert when we're traveling, which proves that he understands the potential dangers, says Jenny. People who can respect that a guide dog or service dog is working when traveling are really doing a great service for the disabled person by understanding that that's what's necessary. Traveling internationally with a guide dog is a vastly different experience as well. Jenny is a lifelong student of history and culture, and she finds it so exciting to visit a city or country she's never been to before. So having Shiloh to travel new countries with has been extremely helpful for Jenny. Before traveling anywhere internationally, Jenny always makes sure she understands what the rules of the country may be in terms of accessibility and also for admission into the country with a guide dog. As part of her essential research, Jenny does a Google search on entry regulations for service dogs in each country to find out what is required. Jenny also suggests contacting one of the many international guide dog organizations, as they're the experts on what may be required when traveling. As with domestic travel, Jenny recommends always traveling with all your guide dog documentation that is legally required to ensure you've complied with all the requirements to enter a foreign country. Jenny also notes that culturally, guide dogs are accepted differently in every country. In Japan, they have less than 1,000 guide dogs for the entire country. So in addition to doing research on how to enter the country with a guide dog, Jenny values the importance of the culture in that country as well and tries to let places she's visiting know ahead of time that she'll be there with her guide dog. Traveling with a guide dog domestically or internationally, you come across people who are fearful, probably because they just don't know or understand, says Jenny. So we take the necessary extra steps to advise people every place we travel that we will be visiting with a guide dog. Sometimes even that's not enough, though. It can help when people are educated on what a guide dog can do, and you can then tour a country just like anyone else. Jenny is also an avid student of language, so before visiting a new country, she learns the basic vocabulary in their native language to at least be able to state, "I'm blind, and this is my guide dog." As a person with a disability, we have to advocate every second of our lives, says Jenny. There have been times, whether domestic or international, when we will run into someone questioning entry because of my guide dog. And even when you plan ahead, you have to be flexible and have a backup plan, as things may not always go the way you want them to. It's important for travelers with guide dogs to know the rules, abide by them, and sometimes expect that others will not follow the law and demand more than is necessary, or refuse entry outright. I've learned that when I say, this is my ADA-certified guide dog who is necessary for me to navigate, wherever the public is permitted, we are also authorized to enter. That usually resolves the situation and things work out. Although Jenny admits traveling with a guide dog can be challenging and takes a lot of preparedness and advocating on her part, it's completely worth it and even makes her travel experiences better. What I love most about traveling with Shiloh is that he's removed the element of fear for me, says Jenny. He's built my confidence about my ability to go places I've never been before, and Shiloh loves it too. He gets so excited when I pull my suitcase out, and sometimes he'll put a toy in there all by himself. Shiloh makes his gratitude known with many kisses of thanks. From medicalnewstoday.com, Alzheimer's. Could the brain's glucose metabolism pave the way for new treatments? Article by Annie Lennon, L-E-N-N-O-N. How neurons consume and metabolize glucose could hold the key to new treatments for Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. Javier Zayas Photography, Getty Images. There's a honey spoon with a little jar of honey. Researchers investigated the glucose uptake and glucose metabolism in neurons. They found that neurons metabolize glucose themselves and that glucose metabolism is crucial for proper neuronal function. Further studies are needed to see whether these findings translate to humans. The brain requires large amounts of energy to function. Glucose is the primary fuel for neurons. While the adult brain accounts for 20 to 25% of glucose consumption, developing brains may require an even higher quantity. How glucose is processed in the brain, however, has remained unknown. Some have suggested that glucose may be metabolized by supporter glial cells and then exported to neurons. More recent studies suggest that neurons may be able to process glucose on their own. It has been difficult to determine whether this is the case due to difficulties in isolating neurons from glial cells for study. Understanding how glucose is metabolized for energy in the brain could pave the way for new treatments for conditions linked to glucose uptake, such as Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. Recently, researchers conducted cell and mouse studies to assess how glucose is metabolized by neurons. They found two proteins that make it possible for neurons to metabolize glucose themselves, both in cell cultures and in animal models. Dr. Charles Munyon, M-U-N-Y-O-N, a functional neurosurgeon with Novant Health in Charlotte, North Carolina, who was not involved in the study, told Medical News Today, these findings appear to settle a long-standing controversy fairly definitively, and the study is elegantly designed. While it is still not clear what proportion of neuronal energy comes from direct glucose metabolism, we can be certain that the answer is not negligible. The study was published in Cell Reports. Brain cells use glucose as fuel. For the study, the researchers used induced pluripotent stem cells, iPSCs, to generate human neurons. They then added the neurons to a labeled form of glucose. In doing so, they found that neurons were able to break down glucose into smaller metabolites. Next, the researchers removed two key proteins for importing and metabolizing glucose from the neurons using CRISPR gene editing. Removing either of these proteins impaired the breakdown of glucose in the human neurons. This, noted the researchers, means that human neurons indeed metabolize glucose. Sex differences. The researchers next wanted to see whether the findings translated to animal models. To do so, they engineered neurons in mice to lack the same two key proteins for glucose import and metabolism. The mice that lacked one of the proteins showed normal memory and learning at 3 months of age, but at 7 months they showed severe learning and memory deficits. For the other tested protein, while both female and male mice had normal memory at 3 and 7 months old, they noted that females, but not males, developed learning and memory loss by 12 months. The researchers noted that further studies are needed to understand what may explain the sex differences. Lastly, they investigated how neurons adapt when glucose is not available as an energy source. They found that neurons use other energy sources, such as a related sugar molecule, galactose, which was less efficient than glucose as an energy source for the neurons. The researchers concluded that neurons metabolize glucose by themselves and that they require glucose metabolism for normal function. Limitations. When asked about the study's limitations, Dr. James Rinney, R-I-N-I, a neurologist at Ochsner Health, O-C-H-S-N-E-R, who was also not involved in the study, told MNT that as the study was conducted in mice and in a lab setting, it remains unclear if the findings apply to humans and real-life settings, too. He added that the method used to measure glucose metabolism may not capture the full picture of how neurons metabolize glucose in the brain. Furthermore, the study only looked at one aspect of brain function, how neurons metabolize glucose, and did not investigate other factors that may contribute to brain function, such as the role of other nutrients or neural signaling pathways, he explained. Implications for treating Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. MNT also spoke with Dr. Fahmi Hyder, H-Y-D-E-R, professor of biomedical engineering at Yale School of Medicine, who was not involved in the study, about the study's implications. He noted that the study adds a well-established line of experimental evidence suggesting that neurons metabolize glucose on demand. When asked about the study's implications, Dr. Rini added, "Direct glucose metabolism pathways may be a new target for therapeutic interventions in brain diseases. For example, if researchers can find ways to enhance glucose uptake or utilization by neurons, it may be possible to improve brain function in people with neurological disorders, such as AD and PD. There have been multiple trials already that have suggested this. CTAD 2022 data suggests Januvia may be neuroprotective in AD, he explained. Dr. Charles Munyon noted, however, that there's no evidence that the findings will impact therapeutics for AD or PD. While it is true that glucose metabolism decreases in these conditions, this is a secondary effect due to accumulation of amyloid, tau, or alpha-synuclein, he said. In summation, from a basic science standpoint, this is a well-designed study that answered a long-standing question. In terms of how this will likely impact medical treatment, I don't see a significant impact coming at all, he concluded. From 9to5mac.com, PSA, Atomic macOS Stealer malware can compromise iCloud keychain passwords, credit cards, and crypto wallets. Article by Michael Potuck, P-O-T-U-C-K. Back in March, we saw a piece of malware surface for macOS called MacStealer that's able to compromise iCloud keychain passwords, credit card information, files, and more. Now a new malware called Atomic macOS Stealer is being sold as a service to malicious parties that may be more threatening. This year, we've seen a report from Malwarebytes covering the state of malware on Mac, as well as another study from Elastic Security Labs. In the latter, results showed just 6% of all malware impacted Macs. But even though it's more likely to affect Windows and Linux, threat actors are actively designing malware specifically for macOS, and it's important to stay diligent. With the MacStealer malware that we saw in March, it indeed was powerful, but is likely a lower risk overall because macOS Gatekeeper should block it from being installed. Cyble Research and Intelligence Labs, via Mac Rumors, recently found the new Atomic macOS Stealer, AMOS, malware as it was advertised for sale on Telegram. The threat actor marketing it is regularly updating the malware and is charging $1,000 a month for it. Notably, Cyble, C-Y-B-L-E, didn't mention macOS Gatekeeper is offering protection for the new AMOS in its technical analysis, so it could prove more dangerous than MacStealer. What can Atomic macOS Stealer, AMOS, do? If installed, AMOS can compromise a long list of items, including iCloud keychain passwords, the macOS system password, cookies, passwords, and credit card details from Chrome, Firefox, Brave, Edge, Opera, and more. It can also compromise crypto wallets, including Atomic, Binance, Exodus, Electrum, MetaMask, and many more. The malicious party selling the malware as a service also includes a web panel, Brute MetaTask tool, logs in Telegram with notifications and more to buyers. Here is the threat actor pitching the malware on Telegram. There's a screenshot of what's going on there. After the malware compromises a user's information, it compresses the data into a zip file and sends it back to the malicious party through a CNC server URL. Cybel has a detailed breakdown of how the malware works in its post at a hot link. How to stay protected against AMOS and other malware. Cybel also shared a reminder about best practices when it comes to installing apps and broader security habits. While you probably know these, it might be helpful to remind friends and family, smiley face. Download and install software only from the official Apple App Store. Use a reputed antivirus and internet security software package on your system. Use strong passwords and enforce multi-factor authentication whenever possible. Enable biometric security features such as fingerprint or facial recognition for unlocking the device whenever possible. Be wary of opening any links received via emails delivered to you. Be careful while enabling any permissions. Keep your devices, operating systems, and applications updated. How to check your Mac for malware. If you're curious to do a checkup on your Mac to make sure there's no malware or adware, Malwarebytes offers a free app for individuals to find and remove it. From Bleeping Computer via TomsGuide.com, 35 million Android users hit with adware. Delete these apps now. Published April 28th. Even if you're downloading new Android apps from an official app store like the Google Play Store, you still need to be careful as bad apps do manage to slip past Google's defenses from time to time. When we talk about bad apps, most of the time we're referring to malicious apps that contain malware. But another threat to look out for is adware apps. While not clearly as dangerous as malicious apps, adware apps can put your privacy at risk as well as your devices themselves, since they use additional resources when loading ads in the background to make money for their creators. As reported by Bleeping Computer, a set of 38 adware apps have been discovered on the Play Store that have been downloaded by 35 million Android users to date. Although the apps in question have been downloaded all over the world, it's mainly users from the U.S., Canada, South Korea, and Brazil that have fallen for these ones. As is the case with other copycat apps, these 38 adware apps are actually Minecraft clones downloaded by users, most likely children, that were unwilling or unable to pay the $6.99 to download the official Minecraft Android app from Mojang. Delete these apps right now. These 35 Minecraft clones found spreading adware on the Play Store were discovered by the cybersecurity firm McAfee, which published its findings in a new blog post. Although these apps aren't dangerous in the way that malicious apps are, it's still recommended that you delete them from your smartphone immediately if you have them installed. Here's the full list of Minecraft clone adware apps, along with how many times they've been downloaded from the Play Store. Blockbox Master Diamond, 10 million plus. Craft Sword Mini Fun, 5 million plus. Blockbox Skyland Sword, 5 million plus. Craft Monster Crazy Sword, 5 million plus. Block Pro Forest Diamond, 1 million plus. Block Game Skyland Forest, 1 million plus. Block Rainbow Sword Dragon, 1 million plus. Craft Rainbow Mini Builder, 1 million plus. Block Forest Tree Crazy, 1 million plus. Craft Clever Monster Castle, 500,000 plus. Block Monster Diamond Dragon, 500,000 plus. Craft World Fun Robo, 500,000 plus. Block Pixel Art Tree Pro, 500,000 plus. Craft Mini Lucky Fun, 500,000 plus. Block Earth Skyland World, 500,000 plus. Block Rainbow Monster Castle, 500,000 plus. Block Fun Rainbow Builder, 500,000 plus. Craft Dragon Diamond Robo, 500,000 plus. Block World Tree Monster, 100,000 plus. Block Diamond Boy Pro, 100,000 plus. Block Lucky Master Earth, 100,000 plus. Craft Forest Mini Fun, 100,000 plus. Craft Sword City Pro, 100,000 plus. Black Loki Monster Builder, 100,000 plus. Block Boy Earth Mini, 100,000 plus. Block Crazy Builder City, 100,000 plus. Craft Sword VIP Pixel Art, 100,000 plus. Block City Fun Diamond, 100,000 plus. Craft City Loki Rainbow, 100,000 plus. Craft Boy's Clever Sun, 100,000 plus. Block City Dragon Sun, 100,000 plus. Craft Loki Forest Monster, 100,000 plus. Loki Craft Forest Survival 3D, 50,000 plus. Craft Castle Sun Rain, 50,000 plus. Craft Game Earth World, 50,000 plus. Craft Lucky Castle Builder, 50,000 plus. Craftsman Building City 2022, 50,000 plus. Craftsman Building City 2022, 50,000 plus. Craft Rainbow Pro Rain, 50,000 plus. After discovering these 35 adware apps as part of its work as an App Defense Alliance member, McAfee subsequently reported them to Google, and they've all been removed from the Play Store. However, if you have any of these apps installed on your devices, or more likely your child's tablet or smartphone, you will need to manually delete them. Poor smartphone performance? Adware may be to blame. Just like with a mobile malware infection, having an adware app on your smartphone can seriously slow it down and lead to overheating, increased data usage, and poor battery life. Normally, when this happens, users with adware installed on their smartphones may immediately notice that performance loss they're experiencing. However, since these were Minecraft clones, after all, infected users likely thought these slowdowns were caused by the games themselves and not the adware they were running in the background. Another reason these adware apps may have been hard to spot is that the ads were loaded in the background once these games were launched, but nothing was displayed on a user's screen. Network traffic analysis by McAfee showed that suspicious network packets from ad libraries were exchanged in the background. If your smartphone is suddenly showing signs of a slowdown, it's worth going through the list of apps you currently have installed, as you could potentially have an adware app running in the background. How to stay safe from adware apps? Unlike with malicious apps, where installing one of the best Android antivirus apps on your smartphone can keep you safe, the same can't be said for adware. Adware apps aren't considered as dangerous as malicious ones, and since all of the ads are loaded in the background once one of these apps is running, they have a better chance of making it through Google's security checks for the Play Store. For this reason, it's up to you when it comes to avoiding them. The adage, if something seems too good to be true, it probably is a great one to keep in mind here. Scammers and even cybercriminals often target users that may not be able or willing to pay for an official version of a game like Minecraft by creating copycat apps. These apps are far from the real deal, but for those with an itch to play a particular game that lack the funds to purchase it outright, they can help fill the gap. Since apps like these are more likely to be installed by children, you can use one of the best parental control apps to keep a closer eye on how they use their tablets and smartphones. At the same time, you want to ensure that you need to enter a password or use your fingerprint to download any new apps from the Play Store. It's also important that you talk to your children about the dangers of downloading new apps onto their devices and warn them about how side-loading apps can make them vulnerable to hackers. These Minecraft clone apps spreading adware may have been removed from the Play Store, but the minute the next big game comes around, expect to see scammers do the exact same thing all over again. Today's best McAfee antivirus deals at a hot link. Get instant access to breaking news, the hottest reviews, great deals, and helpful tips. Anthony Spadafora is the security and networking editor at Tom's Guide. And I've run out of time for this week's Envision News. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode's underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, the ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call 919-832-5138. Thank you.